Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, September 21st, 2013. This is episode 1015. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by LegalZoom.com. Visit LegalZoom.com for affordable legal solutions you can trust. LegalZoom's not a law firm, no, but they're better. You can get self-help services at your specific direction. Speak to a legal plan attorney to get your questions answered and get ongoing advice. Visit LegalZoom.com. Use the promo code TechGuy. You'll get $10 off at checkout and our eternal gratitude. And by RingCentral. We do everything in the cloud. Well, that's why I love my cloud-based phone system from RingCentral. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral is $20 per month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial, and when you buy one desk phone, you get a second phone free, up to 20 phones total. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. Well, a good day to you. Hey, 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 Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. This is the show where we talk about nerdy stuff, or is it geeky stuff? Actually, last week, somebody asked me, what's a geek versus a nerd? I don't know. Nerdy stuff or geeky stuff? Let me put it this way. Anything with a chip in it. Computers, the internet, smartphones, home theater, digital photography, that kind of thing. Heather Hammon, the phone ranger, is here. Now, you remember last week the guy called me and said, what's a geek versus a nerd? And I gave him my definition, which is that a geek is somebody who cares more about what's going on above the neck than below the waist. And a nerd is just somebody who's got poor social skills, but sometimes geeks are nerds, sometimes nerds are geeks, but they don't have to be. Are you a nerd, a geek, a dweeb? What are you?
I'm a geek.
You said that with certainty. You know, I think not. I think not. And I'll tell you how I know. John C. Dvorak, my old friend, used to test people by asking him a question. In the old days, it was, what's your favorite search engine? If they said Alta Vista, you knew they weren't into it. If they said Google, you knew they were geeks, right? Bing. Bing's my favorite. No, not a geek. But now we were talking about Battlestar Galactica before the show began. And you said you met Edward James Olmos. And I said, wow, that's awesome. I love him. And you said, what part did he play in the show?
I did say that.
Now, a true geek would never not know that Edward James Olmos was Commander Adama in the Battlestar Galactica. So I'm afraid I'm going to have to give you I'm ruling you out. You are neither a geek nor a nerd. You're just a very nice lady.
Okay. So I get an F minus. I just couldn't remember.
Were you? I think you were a popular person in high school. See,
middle of the road.
Yeah. See, here's the funny thing. Most of the time you think of geeks and nerds as not being popular in high school or being popular only with their group. Did you ever see that great TV show, Freaks and Geeks?
Oh, love
wasn't
it.
A wonder about high school. And she was a mathlete who kind of, remember, she was a geek. That's a geek, a mathlete.
Right, right.
But then, straight A student. But then she kind of started hanging out with the burnouts, the wasters. And she became a freak, not a geek. But she was kind of a cross-platform freak geek. And they had the greatest, those two guys, the geeky guys, I can't remember their names, but they were, anyway, I don't know how I got off on this. I don't know how we got off on this, except that I was shocked that you did not know who Commander Adama was in the
past. I feel horrible. I'm so confused now. I think I need to, I don't know what. Because both my parents, I think, would have been considered geeks. Popular, but mathletes, if they'd had that back in the day. And then here I am, you know, disgracing the family.
Yeah. Once a geek, you should be. See, I played chess in high school. I think I was in the chess club and the AV club. I think that kind of qualifies me.
Wow.
We didn't have computers back then because it was, you know, we had rocks. We had abacuses. But I did know how to use an abacus, I confess, which pretty much qualifies you, I think.
Did you play marbles, too, and have a big hoop that you rolled down the street for
yes,
fun?
Yes, and I had a penny farthing bike. I had a bike. The front wheel was very, very big. The back wheel was very, very small. Nothing wrong with that. I shaved off the handlebar mustache. I don't wear the derby anymore. What do you think? I was born in the 1920s?
That's how you were making it seem.
My favorite game was kick the can.
Did they have radio back then, Papa Leo?
You know, we're being silly, but in fact, the tech has the world changes so fast, and it seems to be accelerating. In fact, there's a lot of research and thought put into this that, in fact, it is accelerating. So I'll give you an example. The changes between 1800 and 1900, the Industrial Revolution and so forth, yeah, there were some changes. But the changes between 1900 and 2000, cars, airplanes, computers, the information revolution, much more happened in that second century than the first, right? And I can only imagine, and some have said, that what has happened in the first decade of the 21st century, between 2000 and 2010, was as much as had happened the previous 100 years, and that's going to, again, in the next 5 years, as much will happen as in the last 10, and on and on.
My brain can't handle it.
Well, it's geometric. It's exponential, in fact.
Exponential, that's the word.
And, in fact, that's why there's a guy, I don't know if you know the name Ray Kurzweil. You might recognize his last name, because the Kurzweil synthesizer was Stevie Wonder's tool of choice. In fact, it was because he designed that synthesizer for Stevie Wonder, he was an engineer at MIT at the time, that he got interested in the idea, because Stevie was blind, of text readers. And he created the Kurzweil voice synthesis, which was the earliest and one of the best voice synthesis programs, became an artificial intelligence researcher. And currently, he's at Google, and his great interest is what he calls the singularity. He's the one who observed things are doubling, you know, every few years, doubling in the speed and the rate of innovation and change. It's his opinion that we are rapidly closing in on this point in time. He calls it the singularity, when computer intelligence, information technology becomes indistinguishable from humans. Now, he doesn't mean the same as. That's not the same thing. I've had this debate with him many times, so I know exactly what he's talking about. He says, and he's written this up in a number of books, the Age of the New Machine, I think it's called, The Soul of the New Machine. And he's also written The Singularity is Near and others. He believes that in the next perhaps 20 to 50 years, in fact, in the lifetime of many people listening, this singularity will happen. Computers will be smart as humans, indistinguishable from humans. And then things really start to speed up, because computers can start designing newer, smarter computers. And it's faster and faster and faster and faster and faster. Those new smart computers design the new smart computers. The new smart computers. And pretty soon, I don't know what happens.
Your head explodes.
Pretty soon, it's Terminator. It's Terminator 2 is what happens, or it's the main. Pretty soon. Now, I asked Ray. I said, Ray, this sounds terrible. Should we not be afraid of these machines becoming smarter than us and eventually saying, what do we need humans for? They're just wasting our space. And he said, no. And this is what he told me. No, because we're their parents. They're going to like us and revere us. Oh. And they're going to cherish us, because they wouldn't exist if we hadn't invented them in the first place. He said, in fact, we will be as God to them.
That's right.
We created them. You think that? Are you believing that? Because I don't think I think they're just going to wipe us out. I don't think Arnold Schwarzenegger can save us, frankly. I think it's... Yeah, he wrote The Age of Spiritual Machines. Of course you're going to say that, because if you're telling the world, well, what's happening is information technology is happening so rapidly, so quickly, advances are being made so quickly, and this is true, that at some point it will no longer be the humans that are making the inventions, the innovations. The machines themselves will innovate and invent, and of course they will do it at a rapidly increasing pace. If you tell people that, you better tell them something like some fairy tale, like, oh, but don't worry. They're going to like us.
It'll all be fun.
Otherwise, they're going to burn the machines, right? So I don't know. I kind of hope this does happen. I'll tell you why. And this is the other thing Ray says. He says he wants to live long enough. He wants to survive to this point. He wants to live long enough to live forever. Because he believes if he can just survive to this point, they can take his brains and pour them into one of these machines. And then he will never die.
Huh.
I said, but Ray, do you not believe in a soul? Do you not think that there's something different about the human mind, something ineffable that a machine can't duplicate? He says, no, I don't know. What are you talking? He says, if you can't tell the difference, what does it matter? Now we're talking deep philosophy, because if your body dies and your brain along with it, but you've somehow taken the contents of your brain and put them in a machine, did you not die? Does that thing thinks it's you, but is it you? Oh, man, how did I get into this?
Uh-oh,
let's take a break.
You did not die.
I want to answer some calls. Heather Humming, you give her a ring. We're going to talk high tech. I'm sorry I brought this up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The iPhone less. Actually, I still have the old iPhone. Tech guy. Heather Humming. So you're an iPhone 4 person, right? We talked about this before. You think iPhone 5S or 5C? Which do you think? You like the color one? Did you order one? Are you talking to me? I'm talking to you.
What was the question?
I'm sorry. You were talking to somebody else. I shouldn't do that to you. Apologize.
But
I'm,
you wouldn't know because so I was listening to him. Yeah.
Yeah, you were talking to somebody. You were doing your job. And then along comes Leo, messing everything up. Heather, go back to work. I forget I said a thing. Let's go to the phones. But before you go back to work, who should I talk to?
Well, I'm really liking line 3, but I didn't get his name yet.
Okay, well, let me do Lenny, and then I'll do line 3 next, okay?
Deal.
All right, Lenny is in San Juan, Puerto Rico, been hanging on for a long time. Hi, Lenny.
Hi there, Leo. Good afternoon. Good to meet you.
It's good to talk to you. Thank you for calling.
I'm calling from San Juan, Puerto Rico. Good to meet you.
Beautiful area, man. I love old San Juan. It's so amazing. I love it.
Thank you. I got a question regarding ham radio application on PC.
Okay.
Have you heard of Echo Link?
I have heard of Echo Link. Yeah, I've even used Echo Link because, as you know, I'm a ham. What's your ham call sign?
KP4XN, but I am not active. So I just renewed my license several weeks ago to the FCC, but I'm planning in the meantime to be active again because I'm a very I really like the DX.
DXing is fun. EchoLink is not a DXing kind of thing. Well, KP4XN, nice to meet you. I'm W6TWT, also a ham, also inactive. I mean, my calls are active, but I hardly ever do it. EchoLink is one of the few things I can do. You see, EchoLink is a response from the ham community to the internet, in effect.
Okay.
Yeah, it is a system that uses the internet to connect ham operators one to the other. So you know, you talked about DXing. That's listening over the radio waves to distant signals and saying, hey, I heard somebody in Helsinki or whatever. Echo Link kind of makes that whole thing kind of meaningless, because what happens is you'll use your ham radio to get to a relatively, and this is usually done with mobiles or handhelds, less powerful ham radios, you'll get to a repeater station, which is nearby, usually in a on an elevated area. That repeater station will then go over the internet to another repeater station in another area where it comes off the internet and goes up on a radio tower. Now, you can do a lot of things with Echo Link. It's very cute, very cool. In fact, you don't even, I think you're right, I don't think you even need a radio. You could do Echo Link.
Yeah, I also use the app on the iOS. I don't have any problem at all. But the problem is with configuring the firewall. I just run the firewall test. It says that the UDP port something 58 or whatever like that, 5598 or 5599,
right,
it has to be open. But when I go to the router...
Let me explain this in a kind of generalized fashion, because this applies to a lot of internet technology. So it'll apply to what you're talking about, Echo Link, but it applies to gaming devices. It applies to a lot of things. To understand what we're talking about, you have to understand that there is this kind of imaginary system when you use the internet. They call it ports. Have you ever seen the old days telephone operator where they'd sit in front of a board with a lot of sockets and they'd have these wires and they'd say, I'm connecting you to the party to which you are calling, and they'd plug one wire into one hole and another wire in another hole. Think of it that way, but it's done, there's no physical board, obviously, but each of those sockets is a port. Your computer has over 65,000 ports, each of them numbered from 0 to 60, I think it's 65,536 or something like that. The first 1,024 ports are the most important. Those are used by well-known internet protocols. Port 80, for instance, that's the socket for web surfing. Port 23 is a socket for email, I think. I'm trying to remember my ports. But when you get above 1024, those ports are available, generally available for software to use. So the Echolink software, like other software, like your Xbox 360, like other things, uses internet ports as a way of saying, hey, when traffic comes to this port number, that's for me. That's for me. Now, your router, if it's not configured specially, your router just bounces that stuff away. Traffic comes in over port 5198, for instance, 5198. The router is, and this is why routers are firewalls. They're very secure. It says, I don't know who you're trying to talk to, but I don't understand that port. It only lets in the well-known internet ports, port 80, port 23, port 443, those ports. Those are the only ones the router lets in. So it says, forget it, 5198, boing, and it bounces right off. So what you need to do with the router is you need to spank it and tell it, no, no, no. When stuff comes to 5198 or whatever port your technology is using, I want it. So this is called port forwarding. So you go to the router and you say, hey, router. This is for Echolink specifically, but whatever technology, lots of different, internet connected stuff in your house, for instance, might have its own dedicated ports. Ports that are just for it. Used to be very common. If you wanted to run a game server, a Quake server, for instance, you'd have to open up, I think it was, as I remember, port 666. And that would be anything that came in over that traffic, that goes to the game server. So in the case of Echolink, it's ports 5198 and 5199 and 5200. There's three ports that it wants. And you can read about this on the Echolink website. It's all given to you. So what you'll do is you'll go in, and this is going to vary depending on whose router you have, but you'll open up the router interface. You know, you do that with your browser. You browse to 192.168.1.1 or whatever that magic address is that the router, manual will tell you. And you're going to go in into the port forwarding section, and you're going to say, you know, when anybody tries to contact me on port 5188 and 5199 via the protocol UDP, you could say there's two common protocols, TCP and UDP. UDP is often used for sound or audio or streaming video. But you can say UDP only, TCP only, or both. It doesn't really matter. So I'd say both, just to make it easy. Say, when any traffic comes to 5198, 5199, or 5120 on TCP or UDP, that's for the Echolink program. Send it to this computer. You'll also need the address that the router assigns your computer, your internal address. You need that, and you'll fill that in. Now, that's good. It's good security, actually, because the router still, doesn't really know about these protocols. It just sends it. Doesn't send it to your network as a whole. It sends it to that specific machine and that machine alone. So that the piece of information you'll need to do this, it's called port forwarding for any computer, any software, anything that you need to open up ports for, is you'll need the port to know the protocol that it needs, the port number that it needs, and then the number of the computer where you want it to go. And somebody in the chat room is pointing this out. Old Geezer says, on some routers, they call it virtual servers. They've come up with all sorts of crazy names for this. It's port forwarding. That's the name. Thanks for the call. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time for our home theater guru, Scott Wilkinson from the AVS Forum and our Home Theater Geeks podcast. Hi, Scott.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I am doing great. We talk each week at this time about home theater. There's always something to talk about. I know you get a lot of questions from our audience and from the AVS forum about stuff. And yep. I think you have one aimed squarely at my chest. Tell me about it.
Yes, indeed. Mark from, he doesn't say where he's from. he disagrees with you, shall we say, on the demise of physical media. Now, you and I have talked about this many times, and it's certainly worth repeating that physical media, which by which we mean Blu-ray discs, CDs, optical discs, actual physical things you hold in your hand that contain information, audio, video, programming, you know, is being supplanted rapidly by online streaming and downloading.
Sure.
And
but he thinks that it's going to last. Well, I got one question for you, Mark. How's the Blockbuster in your town doing? Is there somewhere? There isn't any Penaluma anymore that I can go rent a DVD. No, there's Redboxes.
Right. There is a Redbox. There is Redbox, which you can find outside of 7-Elevens and other stores. There still is a Blockbuster in my town of Burbank.
It'll be gone soon.
So it'll be gone pretty soon.
Yeah.
And the question also arises with this new UHD, Ultra HD, high, super high resolution video that's coming. Will there be a physical disc medium for that? We don't know. The Blu-ray Disc Association is thinking about it, but I don't think it's going to happen for at least 2 years. Meanwhile, Sony has now opened their online store for this UHD content. And a company called Red Digital Cinema is soon to start distributing. They've already started tests to download UHD content to their Red Ray player, which is basically a hard disk-based server. And it connects to the internet, and this content comes streaming down to it, stored on the hard disk, and then you play it from there. So in a sense, that's, I guess you might call that physical media, but it's...
No, that's not physical media.
Wouldn't.
When
okay,
I say physical
right.
media, and by the way, somebody, please don't confuse me saying that with me lobbying for it. I'm not.
Right.
I'm not saying, oh, I can't wait till it's gone. I'm just observing that
yes.
the future's not bright. And of course, it relies on higher speeds on the internet, better compression on the internet.
Yep.
Admittedly, there is no better. You know, when I got my fancy new TV, what's the first thing I do is hook up a Blu-ray player to it. Because that's
right.
where you're going to get the best possible picture.
And that's where I think these people who are so adamant that they don't want physical media to die, to go away, is where they're coming from.
Yeah,
you know?
Whether you want it or not is not germane. Whether I want it or not is not relevant. It's
right,
it's really what's going to happen. And it's not, I hate to tell you, it's the same thing with your newspaper, with books, with records and CDs. It's just what's happening.
Yeah.
Because the internet is such a great delivery medium. And that doesn't mean that there aren't still vinyl records around. Sure there are.
Which there are. And there's, in fact, a growing resurgence in that market,
well,
too. Even
okay.
amongst youngsters.
Okay.
It's a small market, I'll admit.
You
it's
know,
a small market, but it's actually...
It's doubled over the last year from 100 to 200 people.
Exactly.
So, yes, there's a resurgence, but I don't... I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a generalized... move away from DVDs, away from CDs, away from Blu-ray, towards streaming it over the internet. And it's pretty clear the writing's on the wall. That's where we're headed. And the good news is the technology supports that.
Yes, exactly. And I want to make it very clear. I want to reiterate what you just said, that you're not advocating for this. You're just observing.
No, I love Blu-ray.
Yeah. There's nothing better. There really is nothing better.
When it came down, I'll give you an example. It came down to me buying, I wanted to own The Sopranos.
Yeah.
After James Gandolfini passed away, I thought, this is the greatest TV show of all time. I should own a copy of this. And I had two ways to do it. I looked online, and you can buy DVDs of it. You can't buy Blu-rays of it, but you can buy DVDs.
Really?
Huh. Yeah, they never did a box set. I was so surprised.
I know they did certain seasons. I think I have
season one or two.
Yeah.
It's by season. Yeah. Or I could go to Amazon and buy digitally. And I decided to buy it digitally. The quality's great. It's not maybe not perfect, but it's pretty close, and I can watch it anywhere. It's more convenient. Unless Amazon goes out of business, I have it forever without having to move it from house to house.
Right.
Takes up no space, gathers no dust.
It's stored in the cloud. You own it, right?
I can watch it on any device.
Mm-hmm.
It's just more convenient. So I think this is a lot of consumers are making this decision. It may not be ideal, but I just feel like it's the way it's going.
Well, you know, an interesting parallel happened with audio. After CD, we were wondering, well, what's the next step beyond CD? And there were two physical media contenders. One was Super Audio CD or SACD, and the other was DVD audio, both of which offered much higher quality than CD. But neither of those disc formats really went anywhere. SACD is still around. DVD audio really isn't. What what succeeded CDs? MP3 downloads, which are less quality, they're lower quality. Yeah. They can be horrible quality, or they can be pretty good, depending on the bit rate and the compression.
But
and
here's an interesting thing. Neil Young's Pono, this 96 kilobit sample.
Kilohertz
sampled stuff is going to be available next year. So streaming doesn't mean bad quality.
No, it doesn't. That's exactly right.
Technology moves. We get better internet speeds, better forms of compression.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And with this new UHD video, we're going to have a new form of compression as well that should increase decrease the size of the files, decrease the amount of time it takes to get to you, and preserve the quality that level that's already there.
I think people get mad at me because they think I'm somehow advocating for it. I'm not.
Right.
I'm just observing. It's what's happening.
It is what's happening. That's right. And the other point I wanted to make here was, there's a balancing act between quality and convenience. Now, there's also a human characteristic of wanting to own a physical object, hold it in your hand, put it on your shelf. But as you just said, you know, it gathers dust on the shelf. And it's much less convenient to have to go over there and get a disc and put it in a drive.
You can't see, but behind me, I've got big bookshelves loaded with books. I love books.
Yeah.
But it's a pain in the butt to move.
It is. And I have to tell you, I have moved away from physical books to e-readers by far. It's so much more convenient. And, you know, I've got shelves full of books, too. And, I hardly ever pull them down. But the e-reader, I can just pick it up. I decide what I want to read. And boom, it's there. It's great. So this balancing act between convenience and quality. Now, with books, it doesn't matter, right? I mean, the text is on the screen or on the page. It doesn't really matter. I mean, you can argue about marking it up, but you can do that in an e-reader, too. With audio and video, it is a matter of quality. And there is a quality hit when you talk about highly compressed, downloaded content. But for the most people, for the majority of consumers, it's not that big a hit. Now, for those of us on AVS Forum, it's kind of more of a hit because we want the absolute best we can get. Ring out every last pixel and every last decibel and frequent hertz of sound. So for those people, I think physical media is never going to go away entirely, or at least not for a long time. But like LP, it's going to become more and more of a niche product. And again, I'm not advocating for that. I'm just, as you said, that's simply an observation of how it's going to be.
Well, sad that may be, and it certainly raises issues for people who have limited bandwidth or worse, bandwidth caps.
There's a problem right there.
And but that means we have to fix that. That's all. Scott is the editorial director at the AVS Forum, a great place to go, avsforum.com. If you're into this stuff, it is. I've been a member there for a decade, and it's just fabulous. He also hosts our Home Theater Geeks podcast every Monday, twit.tv/HTG. Thanks, Scott, and we'll see you next week.
You bet. Thanks so much.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Tech Guy broadcast today brought to you by our good buddies at LegalZoom.com. I'm a big fan. Actually, you know, I have kind of a personal stake in LegalZoom.com because for an entrepreneur, LegalZoom is really an amazing thing. A lot of you, I think, dream of creating your own business, but there are legal hoops you have to jump through. And you've got to take those steps to protect yourself and your business from the very beginning. But, of course, when you're first starting a business, you don't, like me, I didn't have a lot of money. Kevin Rose said, you got to do an LLC, Leo, to protect yourself. That's why I was so happy we found out about LegalZoom.com. Like me, over the past 12 years, a million business owners have trusted LegalZoom to help start their business. They're going to save you a lot of time, a lot of money. You don't need a lawyer for a lot of the business that you have to do. You just need the right forms, and LegalZoom is going to help you. But they're also going to provide the self-help services you need to form an LLC or get a DBA or incorporate or whatever, even with an attorney if you need, because they've pre-negotiated very low rates, flat rates, with attorneys in almost every state. You can choose the attorney based on their profile, unedited reviews from their users, and you'll know exactly what you're going to pay up front. You can get that phone advice, which is really, really nice. That's a nice new feature. Get an LLC or a DBA, incorporate, or form a nonprofit for just $99. That's nothing. And by the way, they also do stuff for personal use, like last wills and testaments, trademarks, patents, protect your family, bankruptcy, divorce, immigration, personal injury. They do this all. Here's a big one. Everybody should be doing a healthcare power of attorney. Oh, man. Very easy to do at LegalZoom.com. Check it out. And if you decide you want to use their services, please use the offer code TECHGUY on checkout. We're going to give you $10 off, and they're going to know you saw it on the Tech Guy show, and that's good news for us. LegalZoom.com. Please, when you check out, use the offer code TECHGUY, all one word, for $10 off. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, taking your calls, answering your questions, making a hash of things. Justin in Middleton or Middletown, Ohio. Is it Middletown?
Yep.
All right. Hey, Justin.
Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for calling.
Not a problem. I've always been a fan. Definitely keep me busy, occupied, out on the lawns with the hot weather and everything. So I appreciate that.
I'm glad you're enjoying it. Do you guys, you must have cicadas out there, yeah?
Oh, definitely.
It sounds like it's, you know, it's funny. I love crickets. And once you get used to cicadas, it's okay. But they're loud.
Yeah, I give them a good whacking every once in a while.
On a summer night.
They just, like, fly out of the trees and stuff.
I think they're related to locusts or something. They're noisy.
Yep.
That's summertime. Summertime in Ohio, to me, is cicadas. I don't know why. That's what comes to mind. What can I do for you?
I just have a question about an external hard drive. I've been using a Western Digital MyBook Essential 500 gig for a while now.
Yep.
I've heard all your recommendations on Carbonite and everything, but I'm not really wanting to do the year-round thing. I want something more of an external thing where I can take around here and there and stuff like that. So I've been looking on for a while and stuff. Pretty much, I have a lot of – I record constant videos, and I'm not the kind of guy to delete everything. So
you have massive amounts of data, in other words.
Pretty much. I'm a guy who believes in keeping everything.
Yeah, so something – an online backup solution like Carbonite, our sponsor, I should say, disclaimer, is a bad idea for you because you have too much stuff. Actually, I shouldn't say that. It's a bad idea for you if what you want to do is back up all those concert recordings because they're too big. If you just want to, you know, Carbonite's for backing up your documents folder, your email, stuff, you know, because you have to use your upstream upload bandwidth. And, you know, most people don't have that much. So if you've got, I bet you have multi-terabytes of data, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. It would take you a lifetime to back that up over the internet. So don't do that. For those big, massive, you can still use Carbonite for, you know, the smaller stuff. But for big, massive files, giant collections of data, things like video recordings of concerts, an external drive is a great choice. Here's what I would do. You want to get that off-site, right?
Yeah.
So get two. And every week or so, take one and, you know, swap them. Bring it to the office or somewhere safe. Somebody pointed out office is a bad idea in case you get fired and they escort you out the door. But somewhere. Bring it to mom's. Put it – but just somewhere else. Because backup is imagining the worst, right? I know we don't like to think about it, but it's imagining your house burning down. If the only place you've got these, you know, backups is sitting next to your computer or in a closet in the house and it burns down – then you lose everything. So keep an off-site copy, that's all. And it's perfectly okay to have just two big hard drives or more and rotate them.
It's just more about the reliability and everything. Like, mine's actually went out to where
yeah.
I think it's a driver issue, but yeah. it has trouble connecting to my Mac and everything.
So what you really want is a RAID 5.
RAID 5.
Disk enclosure. And probably what you want is a network-attached storage device. But you or a Drobo or something like that, something that has a lot of storage but has multiple disks, so that if one fails, because disks, if it's a single drive, you're backing up to one drive and that drive fails. Well, first of all, that's why you have more than one. But with RAID 5, and there are other levels of RAID that do this, but 5 is, you know, kind of the generally accepted one. What RAID 5 does is it's three or four drives. If one fails, you take it out and you put the next one in, it rebuilds. You didn't lose a drop.
You would recommend that over more of the single.
You can do a manual RAID by having multiple drives with the same thing. So you're using some tool on your PC that synchronizes, okay? And what it does is it looks at the hard drive and says, oh, it's missing this file, this file, this file, copies it over. And it does that periodically. Make sure that everything that's, you know, that you want to save is on the external drive. Then you take that external drive, you bring it to work, you bring the work one home. It's missing stuff because it's been a week. That program runs, makes it up to date. Now, if one drive fails, you're up to date except for that last week. The worst case scenario is you might have lost whatever happened in that last week.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yep. I think I got it.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. So RAID is a more expensive solution that gives you lots more storage because you're combining multiple drives, gives you redundancy, but it doesn't solve that off-site problem. The off-site problem is what you really need to do. I think, you know, okay, you're really paranoid? All right. Three drives, right? One at home, one at work, one at your mom's or your girlfriend's or, you know, or in a safe deposit box. And you rotate them. And the amount of time in the rotation is never longer than the worst case that you would want to lose. If you say, I never want to lose even a day's worth of work, then you have to rotate it every day. Bring home one and bring one back to work the next day. If a week is fine, then you could do it weekly. I think two drives is probably fine. Because what are the chances of both drives dying? Nah, that's not going to happen. So there you go. That's the solution. And the problem is if you have, you know, the biggest drives out now are, what, 3 terabytes? And most of them are 1 or 2 terabytes. If you have 10 terabytes, I don't know what you do. You don't back it up is what you do. You just say, you know, if it, you know, it's God's will. Whatever is going to happen is going to happen. I know I have every television episode ever broadcast for the last 43 years. And if they get lost, they get lost. Because you can't. You can't back up that. What do we do? Well, you know, we do save our data. You know, we save our shows. We don't let them go. My friend Alex Lindsay just takes the drive, wraps it in bubble wrap, and puts it in the closet. He doesn't have backups. But if a drive's not in use, it's probably all right. And you just have to. I think sometimes you have to let go. You can't have everything you ever recorded. Somebody's saying, yeah, Hugh Hefner did that. Yeah, Hugh Hefner did that. He may still, for all I know, but this was back in the days, early days of VCRs. He'd have his staff record everything. And if he ever wanted to watch, it was the earliest TiVo. TiVo that took 15 people to do. And then if he ever wanted to watch anything, he'd send down to the basement. Get the show. But I have to tell you, you know, there's stuff that's lost. The first Super Bowl, gone. The first Johnny Carson Tonight Show, gone. Because the networks, it was very expensive to save. In some cases, they didn't record them. In some cases, most often, they recorded them. But after, you know, a while, they reused the tape. They just said, hey, there's a tape in the closet. Go get that one. What does it say? Super Bowl I. Yeah, that's fine. You can use that. There's no recording of it. It's gone.
Wow.
There's a lot of early television that we have wouldn't you love to see the first Tonight Show with Johnny Carson?
Yeah.
The first Super Bowl. That wasn't that long ago. When was it? The 60s. Gone.
First Tonight Show. Wow. Who was the guest? Do we even know?
Well, the Tonight Show, you know. Well, okay. Don't get me started.
Yeah, sorry.
Steve Allen, then Jack Parr. Remember Jack Parr walked off in the middle of the show? He said, I quit.
Beautiful. I'm going to do that right now.
Hey! and then Johnny Carson took over. I don't know where they found him, come to think. I guess he might have been a fill-in guy. Somebody in the chat room said, the kids are going, Johnny who? Who are you talking about? Johnny who? Well, it was Jimmy Kimmel and it was Jimmy Fallon before there was... So remember there was this guy named David Letterman...
Before Jay Leno.
Is he still alive?
No? Yeah.
Whatever happened to him? God, I'm old. Just so old.
I'd love to see a nervous young Johnny Carson.
He was a game show host. Thank you. He did. He was a game show. He started as a magician and then, you know, amateur magician. Then he was a game show host. What was the name of the game? I'm trying to remember. And then they said, you might be good. You might be good on a TV show. Hmm. It's in the middle of the night. Nobody's watching. Am I out of time? What am I doing here? Should I stop now?
I forgot.
Are you paying? You didn't pay attention. I thought you were gay.
Oh, You have a minute and 15 seconds left.
I thought you were... There was Carson Seller. Yeah. And then there was some game show. It was like You Bet Your Life, but it wasn't. Chat room.
The one where the duck came down?
That was You Bet Your Life. That was Groucho Marx. Yeah. Who do you trust? So, that's right. Who do you trust? Not whom do you trust. That would be grammatically correct, which is bad TV. Who do you trust? That's right. And Ed McMahon was his co-host on that. See, I guess I'm not the oldest guy in the room.
Yay. But before Carson Daly, there was a
Carson Daly? I'm so old, I don't even know who that is. All right, we're gonna take a break. Oh, stop it. Go away. We're going to take a break. When we come back, news, local news at the top of the hour, and then a lot more of the Tech Guy Show. Give us a ring. Give us a listen. Go visit the website, techguylabs.com. Join the chat room. There's a link there. All the questions, all the answers there on the website, techguylabs.com. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. We'll get back to your phone calls in just a second. You know, I was logging into my computer, and I realized, you know, I log in to everything. I log into my computer. I log into my smartphone. I have passphrases on my tablets. Do you do that? According to Apple, when they released their iPhone 5S, the one with the fingerprint reader, only about half of Apple owners, iPhone owners, lock their iPhones. And I understand why. It's a pain in the behind to unlock it all the time, every time we want to use it. So much easier. You know, occasionally I'll have a device that I never take out of the house. Never take out of the house. You know, my iPad mini never goes anywhere. And so I've not locked that one. And it's so nice. Swipe to unlock. Everything's there. I can run everything already. But it's not a good policy. And, you know, I often talk about this balance between security and convenience. And that's really very convenient, but not very secure. And I would submit that there is stuff on your tablets, stuff on your phones, certainly stuff on your computers that you probably don't want a bad guy to get. But even more importantly, really, than the data that's there, is the idea that the bad guy might have unfettered access to your hardware and put something on it. Almost always, we hear about security flaws. There was a big to-do last month about a security flaw in Chrome, the browser from Google, that meant that anybody who could sit down at your computer and open Chrome and go to the settings and go here, go there, press a button, click a switch, blah, 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 could see your passwords. And that's true. And Google's point of view is, well, we could lock that down, but it would be a sense of false security, because if somebody's sitting at your computer, there's so many bad things they can do that the going into Chrome and getting a password at a time is not really the things you should be worrying about. So if we fix this, okay, well, that goes away, but there's so many other things. And I think that's the point. I've seen this exploit, they call them, where people exploit a hole or flaw with USB keys at public computers, say at the library or at a hotel. If you ever go to a library, see an array of computers, you could just sit down and use one. What the bad guy does, they take a USB key. I got one right here. This one's looks like a Swiss Army knife. It's very cute. And this is actually pretty big. It's 64 gigs, but it doesn't have to be. It could be just a couple of gigabytes. And they put on there a couple of things. One, an auto run. That means as soon as they stick that into the computer, it runs itself. You might even have one of those. Again, convenience. Yes. Security. No. So they put the bad stuff on there. They put it in the computer. It just runs very quickly. 30 seconds later, they can pull it out. Librarian will never even notice it. Then, a week or two or three later, they come back, do the same thing. Now, the software that auto runs on here checks. And if it sees it's already been installed, it says, oh, good, time to harvest. This is better than Farmville. And it will harvest all the keystrokes that have been issued on that computer since the first time the hacker was there. And that includes all the passwords, all the logins that you use on a public computer. Not so good, is it? So the point being, I have passwords, strong ones, good ones, on all of my hardware, whether it's a phone, a tablet, or a computer, especially the computer sitting here on my desk. Others have access to it. If people have access to it, you'd better do that. I do it on my phone because, of course, I carry that out of the house. And it's not because I'm worried somebody's going to, you know, that I'm going to lose it or somebody's going to steal it. That's the worst thing is that somebody get access to it and then I get to keep using it because they could put that keystroke logger on there, all sorts of stuff on there. And of course, a smartphone has lots of useful information on there too. So my strong encouragement, I guess that's what this is about. Please, please. It really is a good idea to put a password on your computer. Make it a good one. It doesn't. It has to be something you could type quickly. It doesn't have to be as strong as a password you might use on an internet website. Those really need to be super strong. It can be 8 characters. It could be 8 characters you can easily remember. It should not be your name, your birthday, your initials and your birthday, your kid's birthday, your dog's name and kid's birthday. It should be something a little bit more obscure than that, but something you can easily remember. And it probably is okay if you have the same password for all your stuff. Your phone's a little bit different. That's why I think Apple actually is doing us a favor with a yes and no with a fingerprint reader. Yes, because it is strong security. It's as strong as a good password. Maybe stronger because only your thumb or forefinger can unlock the phone. Not so good because, have you seen the picture of the little girl? I figured out how to get into Daddy's iPhone. He's asleep on the couch. She takes his thumb, puts it on the iPhone, and wakes it up. So maybe it's not quite as good as a password. But it's a good idea, and it will make people, I think, more likely to secure their stuff, and that's really the most important thing. If you have an Android phone, you have a choice. There's a lot of different ways to lock most Android phones. Some of them even have face recognition. Don't use that. That really doesn't work. It's unreliable. Sometimes it doesn't work, and sometimes it works when it shouldn't. They also have a pattern. This is kind of a little bit better than a swipe. Swipe to unlock is always the same thing from left to right. But with the pattern, maybe your finger goes up, down, left, right, up, over. You know, it does a strain, a loop-de-loop, figure eight or something. And that's a little harder to guess, although my friend John C. Dvorak says you can look at the glass on anybody's phone, see where the smudge marks are and say, yeah, well, I see his pattern. I don't think that works. But, hey, why take the chance? The best thing to do on a smartphone is use a passphrase. You know, just like on your computer, or at the very least, and this is kind of the intermediate one that most phones offer, including the iPhone and Android's phones, is a PIN. Make it longer than 4 digits. That only gives you 9,999 choices. If you make it 5 digits, now that gives you, 99,999 choices is a lot more. If you make it 6 digits, it's 1,000,000 choices minus one. So that's pretty good. I mean, nobody's going to hack that in a reasonable amount of time. I also turn on, and iPhone has this, Android does not, the thing that if somebody tries 10 times to unlock the phone, like they're trying to guess your passcode, then it wipes the phone. I like that. I always turn that on. Because I figure if I can't remember, if you can't remember your passphrase, this isn't going to be so good. So make sure you can remember it. But that means nobody can kind of brute force or try a bunch of different choices and unlock the phone. So I like doing that. The best thing I would say, and what I do on my Android phones, I have a 5-digit, 100,000 different possibilities, 5-digit numeric code, and that's nice. It's not too hard to enter. It balances, I think, security and convenience well. And this Motorola phone's nice because you can put little dots, they call them the skip, that will actually just unlock it right away. So it kind of encourages you to use a strong password. The little skip dots. I like that a lot. And the fingerprint, great idea. By the way, Apple does let you bypass the fingerprint if you can't, for whatever reason, can't use it. Maybe you, I don't know, hurt your thumb or something. You can enter a PIN code. And I should look on my iPhone. I think it's 5 digits. I think it's a 5-digit or 4-digit PIN in lieu of the fingerprint. You know what some say, and I think this is probably true, the best thing to do would be to have the fingerprint and the PIN. Then if somebody, wait, in the middle of the night while you're really fast asleep, gets your thumb, puts it on the thing, then they still need to wake you up and get, hey, what's your PIN? What's your PIN? What? What's your PIN? Just wondering. What? No, see, that's not going to. Again, security versus convenience. A lot less convenient, but a lot more secure. People have been making a lot of jokes about, oh, well, now thieves, when they steal your phone, will cut off your thumb. I don't know. I'd have to examine it. But most fingerprint readers do not work with, if you'll forgive the expression, severed thumbs. It's good news. I hope the thieves know that. More of your calls. Let's talk. More of your calls to come. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And we are talking high tech here with you, the callers. Moving on to Francine. And I'm going to say this right, Francine. Gloucester. Hi, Francine.
Hi, Leo. It's a pleasure to speak with you. I've been watching you for years. I have everything I know about computers I've learned from you. And if you didn't teach me, you taught me how to find it out for
aren't
myself.
Aren't you great? You're not from Gloucester, Mass. You're from Gloucester Township, New Jersey, which, how do they say it in New Jersey? Gloucester, well, probably.
Well, yes, Gloucester Township, New Jersey. Yeah. South Jersey. It's about 40 miles east of Atlantic City.
I love the area. I love the area. I grew up in Providence, which means I'm used to Gloucester, Mass. That's a different Gloucester. What can I do for you? Thank you for the kind words, by the way, Francine.
I mean them. Very nice from my heart.
Thank you.
I really do.
Thank you, dear. I'm going to cry.
And thank you. No, thank you. And thank you for Heather. I think she's wonderful.
Isn't she great? Don't we love Heather? We got we stole her from Dr. Dean Adell. Actually, he'd retired. So 11 years with Dr. Dean Adell. Which was a great training for me because we're both jerks off mic. And
No, you're not. Come on. I don't believe you.
No, but it was good training because you're used to dealing with people who have fairly specific technical, medical questions are fairly technical. So it was perfect training, and we were so lucky to get her. So I'm glad you like H-Bomb.
Oh, she's wonderful.
Yeah, she's fabulous.
All right, here's my quick question. Steve Gibson, the security
our hero of security.
Yes. GRC.com.
Yes.
Has had shields up for a very long time.
Yes.
I fail. Tell me how to fix it. I mean, I have a couple stealth, but the rest are, I have failed, true stealth, and failed.
Right.
And most things are closed, a couple of things are stealth. I don't know how to fix it.
This has to do.
I used to be stealth. I'm not any longer, and I don't know why.
Well, it's your router. So what Shields Up is for is testing your router. It's kind of, when Steve created Shields Up, routers were, arriving in people's houses. It was the early days, and router manufacturers decided that they wanted to make the routers easy to set up. But they did that by making them less secure. They didn't want the tech support calls. So Steve really put the screws to him, and I'm proud of him because he created this site that said, I'm going to test people's routers to make sure that their shields are up. The routers are configured properly for maximum security. And so for years, this is probably, I don't know, almost 10 years, we've been sending people to GRC.com to run their router against Shields Up. He has a new thing, by the way, which everybody should do. The instant UPnP exposure test, because once again, router manufacturers have made mistakes in how they implement them, and they've actually created a very big insecurity. Here's what he's doing. He's pinging at all of the different addresses, all the different ports the router can respond to, and seeing what the router does. The reason is this is what bad guys do. They run little programs that go across the internet and knock on routers. What they're looking for is, and it's much less of a problem now than it used to be, by the way, because everybody's got firewalls and stuff, but what they're looking for is a misconfigured or badly set up or vulnerable computer system. And in the earliest days, the reason Steve set this up is people were turning on BIOS file sharing in Windows, and it meant that anybody could go along on the internet and look at port 139, and if it was open, they could just go in and take anything. They could say it was like having an open door on your network. They could just look at your computer, see all the stuff you'd shared, and take anything they wanted. That was the reason he created Shields Up. So what he does is he looks at all the ports, and he's looking for the response your router sends back when he pings a port. It could be the responses. There's three of them. Would be, yeah, come on in. I'm active, and this port is open. The other next response could be, I'm active, but this port is closed. Red is come on in, or I'm closed. And then he likes this thing called stealth, where the router just doesn't say anything. And there's a reason why stealth is good. It'd be great if your router didn't respond to any of these pings, because then the bad guy just assumes there's nobody. Not only is there no vulnerability, but there's nobody even home. There's not a computer at that address. That's what you want. You want your network to be invisible, and that's what stealth is. Are you saying you're seeing open ports?
No, no, there's no open. The majority of them are purple closed when I check the common ports, and only about four of them are bright green stealth. And at your recommendation, I have, I have a XP and Windows 7, but I bought an Apple Airport Extreme, not the newer one. I've had it about a year and a half.
So it's the Airport Extreme that's doing this, because that's interesting, because mine is all closed. Do you have?
Well, no, mine's closed too. But you say closed.
Mine are stealthed, I think, by default. Yeah.
Stealth. Okay.
Huh.
And Apple helped me set this up when I bought it. I paid like $160 for it.
Oh, there you go. There's the key words. Apple helped you set it up. So maybe what Apple, with the guy, the genius, did is he opened ports.
I don't know. I don't file share. I don't know. That's why I'm calling you.
I wouldn't worry about it.
No.
It used to be an issue because so put yourself in the shoes of the bad guys. And by the way, they still do this. They're scanning the network all the time.
Okay.
They're looking for specific ports. So in the old days, they were looking for port 139 NetBIOS because there was a security flaw in NetBIOS. And they knew that they could, first of all, a lot of people had it on without even a password. And then later, the passwords were not so good. So they knew that, oh, I see port 139. Even if they see it closed, they might be a way around that.
I have it stealth.
Stealth is good. Yeah, stealth. Yeah. So what? Just give me a couple of them that are not, that are. That
you
are,
want the stealth? The stealth is.
No, purple. Give me the purple ones. Give me the ones that are closed.
Okay. FTP, yeah. SSH, okay. Telnet.
So these are all ports that sometimes people want. You can go into the settings and make them all stealth. I wouldn't worry about it.
Okay.
Closed is fine.
Okay.
Closed
That's
is
good.
Fine. Steve, we love Steve, but he's a security expert, so he's going to tell you the most secure solution. The most secure solution is to be invisible, right? But now in the modern day and age, if a bad guy sees that you have an SSH port but it's not active and you're on a Mac, are you using Macs?
No, XP and 7.
Okay. This is the other thing. This may be specific to your internet service provider.
Comcast.
Yeah, they may be. So that ping, Steve can't get around that. If Comcast is responding on that port or closing that port for you as a service, then Steve will see it's closed, not at your router, but a router that's earlier, the Comcast router. I bet you that's what it is. The ones you just described are exactly the kinds of ports Comcast would block.
I do have triple play, which I just got when I got the Airport Extreme. So
I think you're fine. You're fine. I would look at, the preference pane where you talk about sharing and all that. Only check services you need. Make sure the rest are off. You're fine.
Thank you. That's all I needed to hear. I feel a lot better now, and I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
You very much.
Thank you, Francine. Really appreciate it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The magic music signals it's time once again to speak to the man who flies. In fact, it's amazing to see him light. Mr. Johnny Jet. He's got jet fuel in his arteries. Hey, Johnny.
How you doing?
Our travel expert, the guy who tells us how to get better deals and so forth through the internet. JohnnyJet.com is his website. The Twitter is at Johnny Jet. And what is this? Is this going to be how I can get first class?
Yeah.
Too late.
I
already bought the tickets.
Did you?
Yeah, I got business.
I'm afraid to ask how much that costs, but hopefully you used a credit card where you get a 2-for-1 deal?
Yes. My American Express Platinum, once a year I can get a companion fare. But they make you then buy the expensive fare.
That's the problem. That's the only problem with that card is that they do make you buy the most expensive fare, but you do get the free one. But the good thing about that card, which we talked about before, is that you can get into the lounges.
Right.
For American, US Air, and American, US Air, and Delta.
So I'm flying to Frankfurt on Lufthansa on an A380. I'm excited about
Beautiful.
And then from Frankfurt to Venice on a littler plane, but also Lufthansa. And then we're coming back. Actually, the cruise line booked this, so it actually was a pretty good deal. They must book a bunch of fares because I think it wasn't that expensive. And then so, coming back on British Airways.
How long do you have in Frankfurt?
Like an hour. I don't know. Not very long. Because
if you have – Frankfurt's not a great airport. But if you do have a you – know,
it's
like
better than Heathrow, my friend. Heathrow is a nightmare.
T5 at Heathrow, I love. I don't mind passing time in there. Flying into Heathrow is a nightmare because they always make you circle. But,
well, and also, this, and maybe this is just me, but it's usually I'm Heathrow transiting to somewhere else. So they make you go through security again. And it takes forever, and you have to...
Well, they always do that. But the key, by the way, for Heathrow and also other European airports is to make sure that your liquids are in, you know, the three-ounce bag or whatever.
Oh, yeah, no. I adhere to the rules, the strict rules.
Because they're much stricter there, especially at Heathrow. If you have a little bottle of, let's say, whatever, and it's not in a bag, they're going to go through your whole bag, and it's going to take 30 minutes. We almost missed our flight because
Natalie
had
some
makeup.
Get it right. Do it. So, follow the rules. Hey, can I bring Clorox wipes? Because you scared the heck out of me a couple of weeks ago talking about the germs.
Yeah, you can bring Clorox wipes.
Okay, so that can be in my little pack.
No one's even going to know they're Clorox.
Okay, so no, I'm just going to bring some wipes, and I'm going to wipe down the seat. I'm going to wipe down the arms. I'm going to wipe down my head. Okay.
And the overhead bin latch.
Overhead bin latch.
Because that is very important.
Mm. So, now, you say you're going to help me get a better deal.
I am, but you know, I forgot to tell you, at the Frankfurt Airport, they have a supermarket downstairs.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that, yeah.
So if you have a long layover, you get you can get bottled water, huge bottles of water, 1.5 liters for like 63 euro cents, which is like about a dollar.
Wow, that's good.
So it's a great best deal in town, but you don't want to go through security and then get it, and plus you can't bring it through security.
Right.
Anyway, that's that.
Yes. Help me get good deals on first-class fares.
Okay, well.
We're talking upgrades here?
Talking upgrades.
All right.
So I'm not going to help you. I mean, you can get a good deal by using an American Express card sometimes because you get a 2-for-1, only if two people are traveling. If it's one person, it's not worth it for that. But a good travel agent, by the way, can help get you upgraded.
Really?
So, but it costs money usually, and they're not just going to do it if you're, you know, if you don't have any loyalty to the travel agent, if you're just using them for the first time.
They're not going to do you any favors. You want to be a good – so should everybody have a travel agent?
Listen, I'm a fan of travel agents.
Isn't that funny? Because in the internet age now, I go to johnnyjet.com. I can do everything on the website.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you why you want a travel agent.
Okay.
So let's say there's some kind of volcano hits like it did a couple years ago in Iceland.
That's right. And it closed all the European airports. Yeah.
Everything was closed. So to get through to an airline would take hours. Literally 5 hours people were waiting in line. So if you had a travel agent, all you had to do is call them up and say, hey, get me on the next flight or whatever. Reroute me. Some of them were rerouting them, you know, putting them on trains through Southern Europe and then going through even Israel or Morocco. So that's a good reason why to have a travel agent. And also, you know, if you have a really good one, they can get you upgraded, especially for flights. But you don't need a travel agent for flights, you know, San Francisco to New York or whatever, domestic, easy stuff.
All right.
You know, they don't even want your business for that stuff.
No, they don't make any money on it.
No, they don't. Right. Plus, you don't want it anyway because that takes time. And, you know, booking a ticket online is easy these days.
Okay, so only for the special stuff.
Correct, I would say. I don't know how we're going to get through all this in the next 4 minutes.
You got 4 minutes, my friend, to tell us.
I knew it. See that? I'm pretty good.
I slow you down. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Johnny Jet,
all right.
You're on.
So, you want to become a frequent flyer.
Okay.
If you can.
Yep.
Stick to one airline. You know, if you can fly 25,000 miles in a year, which is five trips between San Francisco and New York, it's not that difficult. That's one every 2 months. So if you stick to that, then you can get upgraded for cheap. And free sometimes. Delta gives their frequent flyers free upgrades. But the secret is you don't want to fly during peak hours because even if you're a super elite, you're not going to get upgraded unless you're ultra, ultra super elite.
Peak hours?
You know, during the week, Saturday is a great day to fly. So I came out here. I'm in L.A. right now. I flew out Saturday night because I knew I'd get upgraded, and I did. And I was flying American, by the way.
Okay, so you don't fly like businessman hours.
No, if I flew Friday or even Sunday, I wasn't going to get upgraded.
Right. Okay.
You can look – and what I like to do is look at the seating charts before you even book the trip. I mean, if you're months in advance, you're out, it doesn't really matter because they're going to fill up a couple weeks before. But if it's a couple weeks before, you look at the seating chart, and if there are plenty of seats, you choose that flight. What, and that's what I like about American Airlines. You can go to American Airlines. You can you pretend you're booking a flight even after you book the flight, and you look at the business class or first class and see how many seats are open, and then you know if you're going to get a good chance of getting upgraded. I didn't get upgraded till, you know, a few hours before, but I kept looking and saying, okay, I'm going to get upgraded. There's five seats left, and also when you see a lot of seats open, that's when you know you can get upgraded. If there's no seats, don't even bother trying to smooth the flight attendants or the gate agents, which I always recommend, you know, bringing a box of chocolates for the gate agents.
Yeah.
You know, establishing a relationship. Don't just go hand them a box of chocolates and say, hey, can you get me upgraded? Because it's not going to work. You got to say, you know, you got to be sincere and just.
I don't want anything from you. I just think you're great, and I'm giving you chocolates. Oh, by the way.
No, you don't do it like that. See, listen, okay. I know you have a tough job. No, all these guys are yelling at you because you know they're going to be yelling at you. And say, hey, by the way, I brought you a box of chocolates, you know.
Because you got a tough job.
You're probably not going to get it that flight, but they're going to remember you next time.
Got it.
So that is a good secret. Also, use miles. You know, when you accrue the miles, don't just use it for a ticket to New York a month in advance when you can buy that ticket for $200 each way or under $200 each way. You want to use it for very last minute tickets, or you want to use it for flying business class or first class to Europe, Asia, wherever. That's where you get the biggest bang for your buck. How much time we got? 1 minute?
Yeah.
All right, so getting bumped. So if the flight is full, go to the gate agents. This is a great way to smooth them. Say, hey, is the flight full? Do you need any volunteers? And they love people who do that. So they'll say, yeah, we'd love to put you on the list. And they won't let you know till the last minute. But if they do, say, okay, by the way, can you also give me, you know, the $400 voucher or whatever you're going to give me? Can you also put me in first class on the next flight? And that does happen often. Especially if you're a freaking flyer status.
They're still announcing that all the time. Oh, we got to bump people. Who wants to volunteer?
And you want to travel alone when you're trying to get upgraded. You know, if you have a whole family, you're not going to get everyone upgraded. There's no way. And even if you're with your spouse, it makes it a lot more difficult because that's two seats instead of one. So it's easier to do it with one person. And then be nice and dress well. You know, a lot of people, you know, say that if there's someone who's looking in a business, if it was in a business suit, or at least dress appropriately, they're going to give the upgrade to that person instead of the person who's wearing t-shirts
and that's
a t-shirt and shorts. And
that's why I'm wearing white gloves on my flight. Thank you, Johnny Jett. JohnnyJett.com, at Johnny Jett on the Twitter. He joins us every week to talk about travel. Thank you, Johnny. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And it's time to move on to another call here. Who do I have? I have George in London, as in England.
Yes.
Hi, indeed. George. Thank you for calling. Hi there. Nice to have you.
Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
Just a quick question.
Yes.
So I use quite a few accounts, email accounts. I wanted to know whether there's an easy way to unify all of them into one inbox.
Yes. Yes, there is. And in fact, I have the same situation, and I use Gmail to do that. So okay. Gmail's free from Google. Gmail has an additional lovely added feature of having the best spam filtering in the market. I mean, Gmail's so good, I haven't seen spam in ages. So what I would suggest, in fact, I was using a really expensive corporate-level spam filtering service, and I turned it off about a month ago and expected an onslaught. But because I go through Gmail, it didn't change anything. All this whole time I was using this service, I didn't really need to. There was this whole onslaught, I thought, and no, Gmail's really gotten better and better and better. Gmail has, if you look in the pop and mail forwarding settings, the ability to go to an email account and get the mail from it.
Okay.
So you can have what you're looking for is something called a unified inbox. And actually, a lot of services will do this. They'll go out and get the mail from other services, just as you would. You know, that's what you do when you get the mail. They do the same thing on your behalf, but they put everything in the unified inbox, and then you only have to go to one inbox.
Okay. Is there a delay in them receiving emails?
No, it's, I don't notice it. There may be maybe a minute. They seem to do quite a good job. The ideal, if you want the least delay, is to use IMAP. So if you're lucky enough and all of your email, the different email accounts you have, if any of them support IMAP, use that, because IMAP's set up that it automatically lets the Google Mail know, hey, there's mail. So they do that in a much more...
I think most of them are...
Most of them are POP. Yeah, that's pretty common. Yeah. So you'll be POP mailing it, and you can set it how often it POP mails and stuff. It's not. It's really not bad. It's pretty darn quick.
And will it separate them when they're going to Gmail into folders or...
Yeah, Gmail has, they don't call them folders, they call them filters, but Gmail will create filters for you. They will also, they have something that they do now that's really cool. They've created these default folders that are the primary, they have social emails, they have update emails, they have forums, and it does, I think, a very good job of classifying. You can give it help reclassifying it by dragging it around. I like this new feature. They just started doing this, and I really think Gmail's quite good. The other advantage of Gmail is most mobile devices have excellent, but whether it's iOS or Android, have excellent Gmail support. Windows Phone, not so much.
Okay, thank you.
Are you an Arsenal fan?
Pardon?
Arsenal?
No, Man United.
It's one or the other, isn't it?
Manchester United.
I just saw. I was very happy. Was watching the World Cup qualifiers. I do think the United States is qualified for the World Cup. I'm very excited. Very excited.
Congratulations.
We'll see you there.
We're still waiting.
Oh, come on! You're going to get in. You know you're going to get in.
Hopefully.
All right. Hey, thanks for the call, George. Great to talk to you.
You too.
All right. Take care. Isn't Manchester up north? How can you be a Manchester United fan if you live in London? Aren't you? That doesn't sound right. I think he lives in Manchester. He's just pretending he lives in London. That's what it is. Aaron, Tulsa, Oklahoma. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Aaron.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going well. How are you?
Great. I've got a question for you.
Yes, sir. Well, that's what I'm here for.
Well, I'm looking at getting another phone. I've got the Note 2.
Yeah.
The Note 3 is coming out. We've got the iPhone, of course, coming out.
Yep.
And I originally had the 4S. They came out with the 5. The 5 was not big enough. I got tired of a small phone, so I went to the Note.
Yeah, well, you got a big one now. Yep. 5.5-incher in the new Galaxy Note 3, which will be out, I believe, I'm thinking... end of this month or maybe in October.
Yeah.
That's going to be 5.7 inches. That actually looks like an awesome phone. If you like the Note 2, I believe you'll love the Note 3.
Yeah. Well, I know with Samsung, the thing about it is, I mean, I know everyone's talking about innovation, you know, people are a lack of innovation of this and that. But I kind of feel like, you know, at some point we're kind of slowing down on innovation. It's just more about gimmicks.
Well, that's what, it is. You're right. And that is what happens. For a couple of reasons. One, innovation's hard. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. Aaron, innovate. No, right now. Innovate. No, I don't. I got nothing. It's hard. But two, as the platform matures and smartphones are now becoming a more mature platform, there's less new you can do. And so what happens, the same thing happened in word processing. Remember how, you know, 18 versions ago, Microsoft Word did everything anybody wanted it to do. So how do they get you to buy a new copy of Microsoft Word? Well, they put fins on it. They change the color. They add a ribbon. They do something to make it look different. But, we pretty much got all the functions in there. So it's a mature platform. I don't think you're going to see wild innovation on smartphones. You're going to see incremental innovation. I think what Apple did with the new 5S, the fingerprint reader, that's innovation. The problem with Apple is a lot of times they innovate and then stall. Siri is a good example of something really cool that they just kind of didn't add to. So it's not merely innovate. It's innovate and then support and build and get better and better and better. And I think that that's possible with the fingerprint reader. The first step, of course, they're letting you buy stuff on the Apple store, the App Store, and the iTunes store. Next step would be let other people do that, right? Say to other companies, you can use our fingerprint reader to authenticate for you, too. If they start doing that, watch. I think it'll be a big innovation. Huge innovation. A compass with a spirit level built in, not such an innovation. That's one of the things iOS 7 adds. I mean, it's nice, but I don't think you're going to go crazy You know, and wow, they've changed the world. I can now use my iPhone to hang pictures. And the Samsung, there's a lot of stuff in the Samsung phones that are not particularly compelling. Things like, and this will be in the Note 3. It's in the Galaxy S4. When you're looking at a YouTube video and you look away, it pauses the video. What? Why? Who cares? Well, maybe for some people that might be a huge selling point. I don't. You can scroll up and down by raising and lowering your eyes, which can give you a headache if you do it too much. Not, innovation, gimmick. So it happens. And I think it happens more when you get to a platform that is just mature. This is a mature platform. I do think if you like big phones, the Note 3 is the way to go. But I'll give you one other that should be out soon. They announced it at IFA a month ago. This may be the big phone to go with, the big phone. It's the LG Optimus, or I'm sorry, the G2. The LG G2. This is a successor to their previous big phone. Is it out? Maybe it is out. The release date has been set for T-Mobile and Sprint. Now loading it. You can pre-order. Yeah, okay. So if it'll go in stores September 25th at T-Mobile. So I would wait until you can actually go in a store and look at it. But this is a sweet phone. Big phone, beautiful screen, 5.2 inch. It's not quite as big as your Note, but big enough. And people who saw it raved about the screen. It will not be cheap. None of these big phones are. Actually, it's not too bad. T-Mobile has it for $600, which is not bad. Sprint's going to have it October 25th, and I imagine the other carriers will have it. 5.2 inches, 1080p display, which is a big improvement over your Note. 1080p, I think, nowadays, on any display bigger than, say, 4.5 or 4.75 inches, you want 1080p. The HTC One has 1080p. It's gorgeous. That's a 4.7-inch phone. Anything above 5, you definitely want 1080p. 2.26 gigahertz quad-core processor, 2 gigs of RAM, 13-megapixel camera, 2.1 megapixel front camera. That looks pretty nice. Doesn't have an SD card slot. Not so great. Volume and power buttons, weirdly enough, are on the back. LG calls it the rear key. That's what I'm talking about. It's not exactly innovation.
We got a key in the rear. What do you think of that?
Maybe not something I want. But what I would do is I'd look at them. The Note 3 won't be out for a while. Note 3's got a pleather back. Hey, with stitching. Now, how much would you pay? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls to come. Thank you for the call. More of your calls to come right after this. Our show today, as always, brought to you by the people who do our phone system. We love, by the way, Ring Central. It's almost more than 2 years ago that we decided to move into their beautiful brick house studios. And then I was faced with something I never thought I'd be faced with. I'm not a business guy, right? But here we are. We've got a new studio, new office. I can't make our employees use their own phones. I got to have a phone system. I kind of was stymied. I went to Lisa. I said, what are we going to do? Fortunately, we had Russell Tammany, our great IT guy. He said, I've installed this company called Ring Central. This is a true story. Ring Central before, and it's great. You're going to like it. 3 days later, Ring Central calls us up and said, hey, we love you guys. We should do some advertising. We said, yeah. Well, that, you know what's interesting? We just bought a system from you. It is and we are still happy. No PBX in the basement. We don't have to worry about maintenance, configuration. It's all, you know, in the cloud. Very affordable. $20, starts at $20 per month per user, and that includes long distance minutes and, I mean, faxes in your inbox, voicemail in your inbox, total control. They even have an iPhone and Android app that you can use to make business calls from your cell phone but not pay for it. Incoming texts to your cell phone look like they're coming right in through the business number or 800 number. There's something new at Ring Central called call functioning. This is kind of interesting. You program, you can have your when people call my office line here, when they call the office line, of course, it rings here, but I'm not always at my desk. Most of us aren't. So you can set it up that will ring your cell phone or whatever. But call functioning means you actually tell it the order of devices to ring when somebody calls your number. So your desk phone, then your smartphone or your home phone or whatever. So you don't ever miss a call. Those business opportunities just don't go under the radar. You can even choose how many rings on each phone before it goes to the next phone. This is why digital is great. Cloud is great. Because you don't have a piece of hardware that tells you what you can do. You can do anything. RingCentral is all-exclusive pricing, very affordable with no setup fees. Start right now with a 30-day risk-free trial. That's a great way to go. And we've arranged for a special offer for just for our listeners. When you buy a desk phone at RingCentral, you'll get a second phone free, up to a total of 20 phones. So call 800-543-9980, 800-543-9980. Or visit ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. Everything you would get and more from a PBX in the basement. It is, and of course, expandable as needed. All in software. Beautiful thing. It's a thing of beauty and a joy forever. 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com. Use the promo code TWIT. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. More of your calls coming up. Hour three of the Tech Guy show. Heather Hammon. Hummina, answering your calls. I'll tell you, another big acquisition. If you, sometimes kids ask me, young people ask me, kids in college say, Leo, what should I study if I want to succeed? I think we had a call last week or the week before, right? What should I study if I want to make it in the tech business? And I got to say, right now, and it'll change, but for right now, learn how to write mobile apps. Wow. Google just bought Bump. We don't know how much they paid for it. I'm sure that'll leak out. But, you know, it's got to have been a pretty big acquisition. You know, I would say in the order of $100 million. Bump raised $20 million. In fact, you might remember the name Bump because wasn't that the, was it the 1 millionth or the 1 billionth? I think it was the 1 millionth iPhone app downloaded. Bump is a kind of cool little program that I think probably Google doesn't need, but now owns. It's one where you start with the iPhone. And did you have to be on the same Wi-Fi network? I can't remember. But you would launch Bump on your phone, and you would say, okay, I want to share contact information. As it evolved, you could also share photos and files and so forth. But the original idea was, I want to share contact information. This is what I want to share. And then when you met somebody else at a trade show or a conference or a bar in the middle of the night, you'd say, you want a bump? And if they don't leap to their feet and start dancing, they'll say, yes, let me bump you my information. They launch Bump on their phone. You tap the phones together. This is the funny thing, because you might think, oh, they're somehow communicating with each other. No. What happens when you tap the phone, sorry, didn't mean to hit you so hard. When you tap the phone together, it jiggles the accelerometer and it goes, oh, Bump says, oh, you hit something and it starts sending. And then the Bump on the other phone starts looking for, same thing, oh, you hit me, starts looking for a signal. This is how dumb software is. Huh? Oh. And then the data is shared across the airwaves. Does it, you know, chat room, does it use, used to use Wi-Fi. I'm not sure what they use nowadays. Maybe Bluetooth. 25 people. Bump's been around now for 4 or 5 years. Raised $20 million. Was one of the most successful downloaded apps of all time. As often is the case, had absolutely no route to profitability. How do you make money doing that? No one knows. Bump will stay on the App Store, at least for the time being, although a lot of times when these acquisitions happen, the app disappears. Remember when Google bought Zagat, the food and restaurant and hotel guide, and it just disappeared? It came back a year later, but you know they tend to disappear. Problem with being getting there's good news and there's bad news. For the creator of Bump, David Leeb, his co-founder Andy Weibers, it means probably a big payday. Depends how much Google paid. But it probably means some money. Bump also did a, I didn't realize this, but they also did a photo sharing app called Flock, Flock and Bump. But I have to point out, it's not unusual for Google to acquire stuff and just let it disappear. Same thing happens at Facebook, Apple, and other companies. They're really hiring the engineers, the bright lights, because that's hard to find. That's more valuable. And this is why I tell kids, learn how to write mobile apps. The developer is more valuable than the app itself in many cases. I think that's probably true of Bump. I don't know. I've had Bump since it came out. I don't hardly ever use it. No one I know uses it. Nevertheless, it means Google has acquired some talented programmers. I think back to some other Google acquisitions that never went anywhere. There was I loved it. It was a kind of a Twitter-like app that was better than Twitter, I thought. In fact, I left Twitter back in 2007 to start using Jaiku because I liked it better. Had a lot of features Twitter lacked at the time. Ability to share photos, to have conversations. It had location information. Lots of stuff Twitter later has added, but Jaiku had it first. I remember I loved it. These guys were Finnish and loved it. And then Google bought it and it disappeared. I mean, really, sank without a trace. You may remember a program called Dodgeball. Like that. Kind of, it's a kid's playground game, isn't it? Dodgeball? Yeah. The idea of Dodgeball was, I think, it was location. Some sort of, like, you would let people know where you are. Google bought it, swallowed it whole, disappeared without a trace. Funny thing is, the guys who wrote Dodgeball left Google a couple of years later. They got the big payout, put the cash in their pockets. That's what you do, by the way, when you're acquired. There's usually a term, a contract, that says you have to stay 1 year, 2 years, typically 3 years. So Denz and Naveen, the creators of Dodgeball, took the big wad of money, stuck it in their pocket, and just went, wandered around Google. Yeah, I created Dodgeball. Google did nothing with it. They left after their time in jail was up, and Google jail was up, and then created something you probably know about, Foursquare, which is doing quite well. Who did they make a deal with? Made a big deal. Was it Apple? So, and I'm sure that involves some cash. So the rich get richer. So these guys don't mind. Unfortunately, if you were really tied to Bump or Dodgeball or Jaiku, if you really loved those apps and they went away because Google acquired them, it's kind of depressing. That may be what happens with Bump. I don't know. But as of March, Bump had 1 billion photos shared, was downloaded 125 million times. They, as I said, raised, you know, tens of millions of dollars, and I presume were sold for something along hundreds of millions of dollars. You never know. So Bump and Flock, now part of Google. By the way, Bump has nothing to do with Fist Bump. I guess it does, doesn't it? I guess that's where it came from, just like Dodgeball came from the kids' game. Funny that Dan's, after he did Dodgeball, left Google, did another kids' game, Foursquare, didn't he? If you want to get rich in this day and age, have a great idea for an app, you can get rich in a couple of ways. You can get rich by making money on the app. My friend Lisa Bettany, who created Camera Plus, was a very accomplished programmer, has sold more than 1 million copies at a buck each. Many more, I think 5 million copies at a buck. She's made some money even after Apple's cut. You can get rich by raising money. That's a very popular way to do it. Even if something like Bump has no possible revenue, you still can get venture capitalists who are looking for the next big thing to put some money into it. And by the way, I should point out, when the venture funds come along and say, here's $20 million, kid, it's not unheard of for the entrepreneur to do something called take some of it off the table. In other words, put it in his pocket, wander around. I got a couple of $1 million. And hope nobody notices. The third way, though, and the big exit, the way most guys want to go is, of course, the big exit with, you know, companies like Instagram going for $1 billion. People look at that and they go, yeah, that's me. Or you could get out of college and try to change the world. But, you know, it's your choice. Chances are, if you're trying to change the world, you're doing something you love. It's passion. It's a passion project, not something you're doing to make money. You're more likely to make money at it, I think, than if you just get cynical and say, what can I do to make the most money? So kids, yeah, there's gold in them thar hills, but do something you love when you go to that technical school. Do learn how to program, though. I think if you know how to program coming out of college, whatever your major, you're more valuable. In fact, if you're a social studies major or psychology major and you also know how to program, you're even more valuable, aren't you? All right, hour three of the Tech Guy Show to come. Our website, techguylabs.com. Your call's next. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Enjoy the Music says I should pick Stephen in New Hampshire. All right, let me see if I can find him. There he is in Keene, New Hampshire. Stephen, you're next. Leo Laporte here.
Hey, Leo, thanks for picking my call.
Thank you.
I wound up buying an interesting toy because of you, and I was forced to get an iPad 5 for it. My question is, the microphone built into the iPad 5 is what it is, and I'm looking for something higher quality.
The iPhone or the iPad?
I'm sorry, iPad 5.
Yeah. iPhone. You mean the iPhone 5?
I'm sorry, the newest iPad. See, this is how much I know Apple.
I think the latest Apple's made this problem for us because they don't number them. So I believe the latest iPad is the fourth generation iPad. So that's whatever. The latest iPad. Got it. The microphone that is built in isn't great. What do you want to record?
So, well, basically, if I use an external microphone, which I've been shopping for, does it inherently work and recognize it? Or damn. Sorry.
I heard that. Now I'm going to have to bleep you. No. No, it does not inherently work. In fact, what you want, the current iPad has a lightning connector.
Correct.
And I'm trying to think if it has digital audio in through the lightning connector. Because the ideal way to do it is with a microphone that will take the audio and digitize it in the microphone and then go into the lightning cable. That will give you the best quality.
That seems to be what I found, but the question is, and I'll cut to the chase. I bought a Double Robotics, and I'm
You're crazy. You're a crazy man.
Thanks.
That's
to
$2,500 toy you bought. I got one too. It's a Segway for an iPad, and you can control it over the internet.
That's correct. And I'm actually going to be covering shows worldwide by sending the robot and avoiding TSA.
Oh, that's a great idea. So what kind of shows? Music? Concerts?
High-fidelity audio shows.
What a great idea. And you're going to wander around, and you'll be your iPad. Here comes our speak of the devil. Here's our Double Robotic right now. So we're going to put the iPad. You put the iPad in it, and it uses the built-in microphone on the iPad. I don't even know. I guess it would use whatever you put on there, wouldn't it? Let me see. Let me look at this. Okay, so the way it works on the Double Robotics is the iPad's upside down, so the lightning cable's on the top.
Correct.
So you could use something like the Rode Lav mic or something similar to plug into that. You'd want something that worked with a lightning connector.
And that's totally fine.
Yeah.
Will it work inherently? Because some of them seem to have apps, and I was afraid I had.
Now I understand what you're saying. Yeah, because you're now I understand.
Apple products, but this is because it is a high fidelity show, and I'm not looking.
Yeah,
I'm
you
just
don't want
to have decent audio instead of the audio that comes microphone.
The audio's pretty good, but you're saying you don't want the front facing, built-in microphone.
Something higher quality is probably preferred.
Yeah, and on the Double Robotics, you have to run their software or it won't work, right? Because that's what you're controlling. That's how it uses Bluetooth to talk to the wheels.
Correct.
And then you control it via the internet. So you need internet access at these shows. That might be a little
tricky.
That's
fine. I bought the top line 4G LTE.
I'm
fully into this financially. Help me, Leo.
Yeah, you're heavily committed. I don't know. I would be, I think, a call to Double Robotics, frankly, because I don't know. My sense of it is I would be shocked if it didn't work. Because my sense of it is that the Double Robotics software is just going to use a standard call, API call to get the audio. So as long as the audio convinces the iPad, this is audio coming in through a mic, then the Double app should use it. I'd be shocked if it didn't.
Excellent. And by the way, congrats on the A8. Did you get the W12 engine by chance?
I did not. He's talking about my new car, the Audi A8. I got just the V8. The W12 is a 12-cylinder. What do you think I am? I'm not a jet pilot.
That's a great engine.
Do you have that one?
I have a different car that uses the same engine, the W12.
Wow. What do you have, a Phaeton? Phaeton?
No, a little higher than that, my friend.
A Maybach?
No, that uses the same engine, but 16-cylinder with 4 turbos instead of 2.
Well, you got a little money, Steve. Is this your retirement that you're doing this?
I'm having fun. I mean, it's high-end audio. I kind of am the circus ringmaster for Enjoy the Music.
Awesome. Well, I'm thrilled to meet you. Come by and visit us. Drive that fancy car on over from New Hampshire.
Well, my world is correct on chat. That's what it is.
What is your chat handle?
Enjoy the Music.
Enjoy the Music on chat. All
I'm
right.
on your chat, and I see my world did get the name of the car correct.
Ah, a Lamborghini Murcielago?
No, one below that.
A Bentley?
Yes, sir.
Does a Bentley have that W12 engine in it, really? Yeah, no, yes, Volkswagen owns Bentley. That's right. That's why I asked about the Phaeton. That's the Volkswagen Phaeton is basically a Bentley. But you can't get it in the U.S.
Correct. Nine more.
Well, I'm jealous. Drive your Bentley on over here, and we'll have a race.
Sounds like fun.
Do people drag race in Bentleys?
I wouldn't because some guy will come up with a... We could go on and on about cars. Let's not.
Okay. Hey, it's really nice to meet you, Stephen.
Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. Lots of fun. They're saying in the chat room, and I think this sounds right, the Rode SmartLav. I would be shocked if you got something that worked via the Lightning port as a microphone. You shouldn't have to have a specialized app. It should be the microphone that would work just like the built-in mic. That would be crazy. So they say the Rode SmartLav, it's about $60. Hey, for what you're into this thing, $60, you could do cigarette money. It literally actually is. This thing is crazy. I've never used it. I used it once. I spent a lot of money on it, $2,500. It's like a Segway for your iPad. But the idea is really cool because it gives you what we call telepresence. So, I guess what he's going to do is ship this. And then once it's there, you can see through the iPad's camera. You can hear through the iPad's mic. And you can wander around just like, you're there. And they can see you, by the way. Your picture appears on the iPad's screen. It's very odd. Idea. I had to buy it only to review it so we could talk about it, but now I don't know what to do. It takes the way it works, you order it, you give them $2,500, then they build it. So it takes about 8 weeks to get it. And you have to use Google Chrome, or you can use your mobile, your iPad or mobile device to steer it around. Just wild. Somebody said, how are you going to keep from getting it stolen? It's true. Somebody could just say, hey, nice robot. I think I'll take it home. you need explosive bolts or something in there. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls to come right after this. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We are getting back to the phones here. Let me see. Is it Hamid in Danbury, Connecticut? I think that's who's next. Hi, Hamid.
Hello, Leo.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm also blind, so this one's going to be kind of, interesting, I was wondering about 4K, and you say...
Wait a minute. You can't see a TV, and you want to know about a 4K TV?
Yeah, mainly about how you say, a Core 5 computer with not that much memory and whatever, a cheap one is good enough for just regular person.
Yes.
Okay, so 4K, though, I mean, once 4K is truly a thing, 4K full-length.
Which it will be. And they're going to call it, by the way, no longer calling it 4K, because it's not, strictly speaking, exactly 4K. It's UHD, or ultra-high def, roughly twice as high, twice the resolution of
1080p, correct.
1080p, right.
So how much And maybe we might need Ryan Shrout to help us with this, but how much does that really pull? Like, the stuff that probably would matter to gamers, like a 7870 and stuff like that, like, would that start mattering to just for a home theater PC once 4K is a thing?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. In fact, if you think
about RAM. And,
yeah. Oh, yeah. So it's a lot more data, right? So if you think about what happened, maybe you don't remember, but when 1080p became a thing, we recorded the first 1080p podcast. It was called Mac Break, and we did it. It wasn't even that long ago, maybe 5 years ago, 6 years ago. My friend Alex Lindsay purchased the old Lucas model camera, the one used for, I think, Star Wars Empire Strikes Back. It was a Sony EX camera, and it was the first one of the early 1080p cameras. He spent $100,000 for this used camera. It's the model camera, so it's what they shot. You know, when they have the big spaceships. Now they do it all on a computer, but in those days they had models and they shot with this camera flying in over the spaceship. So we made it. So anyway, the long story short, which is not really my skill, but anyway, what happened was we made a podcast with it, a 1080p podcast, only about 10 minutes long, and nobody could download it because it was too big. And even if they could download it, nobody could play it back on their computer. You couldn't get a decent frame rate. It would stutter. Now, every phone out there can play back 1080p video and record it. 5 years later, that's what happens. Same thing will happen with UHD. More dots on the screen means more data, and video is very big data. In fact, this is something Scott Wilkinson and I talk a lot about, is how are we going to get 4K content, because it won't fit on a Blu-ray disc. It'll need a new kind of disc that'll hold four times the data.
You're not going to get up to 32 channels of audio, perhaps, too.
That's right.
HDMI 2.0.
Well, that's the funny thing. Blu-ray, it turned out to be such a big amount of storage that they could do all sorts of extras on it, including lots of audio tracks, because audio is not as big as video. Here's what's going to happen. The reason, by the way, that happened with Blu-ray is because we got better and better at squeezing the video down, and it turned out it didn't need all 4.7 or 9.4 gigabytes. That's how much data a single-sided or double-sided Blu-ray. Double-sided Blu-ray is 9.4 gigs of data. You're going to need 20 gigs or more for UHD, but the funny thing is we're getting better and better at compressing it. So what's happening is, you know, here comes this technology, but computers get faster, bandwidth gets higher, storage gets better, and we get better at squeezing the video so it's smaller. All of those things meet in the middle, and in fact, yeah, right now if you try to play, one of the big problems that companies have trying to create 4K video or UHD video is the workflow is really tough because you have to have very, very powerful computers and lots of I.O. and blah, blah, blah. So it's really tricky. Yeah, I'm thinking DVD. I apologize. It's 50 gigabytes. A DVD is 4.7 gigs and 9.4 gigs. A Blu-ray disc is more than that. It's 25 gigs and 50 gigs. Thank you for the correction. So we're talking Red-ray or whatever the next disc is going to have probably at least 100 gigabytes of storage on it. But as they get better at shrinking stuff, I think, you know, it'll all meet in the middle and it'll be here. Now, I'm interested because you said, I mean, that you're blind. Do you watch Blu-ray movies?
Yeah, I have the whole Star Wars thing on Blu-ray because of the better audio. I mean, it's lossless.
You really hear the audio, don't you? Yeah.
And that's where I wanted to make a quick comment. I don't really trust sound bars because if you realize, and I don't know how much you can hear, but each speaker has its own audio track assigned to it, as it were. So sound bars really don't recreate that.
Right. And that's true if you've ever listened to them. They give you the illusion of surround sound, not the reality of it.
Right. You hear one lightsaber and one speaker, and then you hear the other one on the other ones, and then one takes a hit on one speaker, and which sometimes you do hear, but the subtle things, sometimes you don't hear it change on those.
You know, it's so cool because you're blind and audio is so important to you, you hear so much more of that movie than we do.
Yeah.
Or people who are sighted do.
Yeah. Or just little bits of sounds they use sometimes.
Right.
Reflections or...
I for some reason, and maybe it's because I have poor eyes and acute hearing, but my whole life I've always been focused on audio, and I hear stuff other people can't hear. And there is a whole world if you could just close your eyes and listen, especially in modern motion pictures, they really it's just as rich audio as there is video.
Yeah, and you can isolate that stuff with a program called DVD Audio Extractor, which you can now extract Blu-rays too. You
right.
can extract it speaker by speaker, so to speak.
Have you listened to this new technology that Scott was talking about, the Z Plus?
I haven't.
Oh, you got to try it. Do you have an iPhone or an iPad? Do you have an iOS device?
We're waiting for the new one. My brother's going to help me get the new one when it starts shipping.
One of the first things you should download when you get an iOS device, get some good headphones, plug them in, and listen to this Z Plus music by Remote Control Productions. And what it is, in fact, they have one cut from the Hans Zimmer Man of Steel soundtrack on it for free. And what it is it's this demonstration of surround sound using just two speakers, left and right, in your headphones. It is mind-blowing. I'd be very curious what you'd think of this when you hear it.
Yeah, see, but that's what I mean. It's just two speakers.
I know. But they're using very sophisticated computer modeling, DSP modeling, to make it surround. And you could hear above and below. I agree. And Hamid, you have acute hearing, obviously. You probably could tell the difference more than I can. I agree. It's not as good as having eight speakers, but it's pretty good.
Yeah. Plus, like I said, I've used DVD audio extractor, and that's how I did my homework to find out, like, what... You know, I found a few surprises that I've been missing, because I used to have a cheap surround sound system before and stuff, so now I know what is supposed to be in each movie.
That's the only bad thing about becoming a connoisseur. It's expensive. It's better to have poor taste. It's cheap. You can eat a Big Mac and be happy. Now you want 7.1 surround sound with 100 channels each.
I want DTS MDA, multi-dimension audio.
Ooh, I don't know what it is, but it sounds good. Is that in movies now?
It's their Dolby Atmos.
Ah. Well, that's what this simulates. This is from DTS, this technology. And it does, I'm just saying, I know you're much more sophisticated. But I'm just saying, when you get that new iPad, and it should be within the next month, I would guess, take a look. Z Plus Music, it's free by Remote Control Productions. And if you have an iOS device, you got to put on headphones. It'll ask you, are you wearing earbuds, over-the-ear headphones, what kind? And then it plays this music, and it's quite impressive. It's all around you. If we're on so many stations where we're mono, I would play it for you. But you'd have to put on headphones and stuff. And we're on the stations that are mono, you wouldn't be able to hear it. You need left, right stereo. But boy, it does a good job. Hey, Hamid, nice to meet you. Thank you for the call. Coming up in just a bit, he's the Gizwiz. We call him that because he loves his gadgets. Dick DiBartolo is going to wrap things up on the Tech Guy Show. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Look who's here. He just showed up on our doorstep, and I think we should adopt him. Dick DiBartolo, the Gizwiz, Mad Magazine's maddest writer, and a very cute little puppy. Oh, let me scratch your dog. Hey, Dickie D. Actually, Dick is a dog lover. He is a... You raise money for animal causes, and I know you really love your rescue mutt, Fairway.
Yes.
Who's named after the grocery store.
Correct.
Because she was born in a grocery store.
No, we happened to be walking by the grocery store when a woman was stepping out of a car with this 12-month-old puppy.
Aww.
And I said, oh, my gosh, can I please see it? And she said, you know what? We are here to set up a table for pet adoptions, and I just rescued this dog from animal control, which she was going to be put down.
Oh, dear.
I know. She said she needs a home. I said, that dog has a home.
aren't you sweet? And Fairway's the sweetest little puppy.
She's sweet.
Yeah.
Now she's 13, so from 12 weeks to 13.
Wow.
Happened overnight, so it's kind of amazing.
Well, you know, dog years are not the same as human years.
No, exactly.
No, they're just instant. So what is your gadget of the
gadget
day?
Gadget of the day is an update on something I started using about 18 months ago. It's from SodaStream. I can't remember did you ever buy one?
I don't drink soda, Dick. I'm with the First Lady. I think we should all drink more water.
Really? That's either very healthy or you're really cheap.
Well, SodaStream is for people who want it both ways. They want all the soda they can drink and they want it cheap.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. I noticed when I was out there last time at the refrigerator that used to be filled with soda. It's empty, and there's just a sign on it that says water is excellent for your health.
So. I actually really love the taste of water. I know I'm weird that way, but I just think it tastes really good.
Yeah. No, in that case, you're lucky.
But Dennis, he likes fizzy water. He drinks water.
We both have. I have the new one. The new one is called the Source, which is now metal. The other neat thing about it is with the older versions, you would take the empty soda bottles with just the water in it, and you would screw it into the machine and then use the carbonizer cartridge to make your seltzer.
Before you get too deep in the weeds here, this is a device that makes soda pop, fizzy water.
Yeah.
You buy only the cartridges that add carbon dioxide and, if you wish, the flavoring, but you provide your own tap water and it fizzifies it.
Oh, fizzifies
it. It's a fizzification
device. I like it even better now.
It's pretty popular. You know, I see them in the Home Depots and everywhere you go, you see these things. They're not cheap. It's $129 for the Source list.
Right. Well, they're everywhere. Amazon and Bed Bath and Beyond. They're all selling them for under $100, but $99.99.
And then, how much are the flavor cartridges and the carbon dioxide cartridges?
Oh, okay. The cartridge is $15, and you just go to a store with the empty one. Like I go to Zabar's, and if Zabar's is closed, I go to Staples, and you just hand them the empty one, and they give you a full one. It's $15.
Okay. And how much soda pop do you get?
I kept track of just the first two cartridges. I made an average of 45 bottles.
Oh, that's a lot. For $15.
Yeah, for $15.
If my calculations are correct, that's $100 a bottle.
Yeah, no. That's very good. You and Dennis should get together. Because Dennis thought it was $105.
No, wait a minute. $15, you get 45 bottles. That's 30 cents a bottle. And these are liter-sized bottles.
Yeah, a liter bottle, okay. Right. So
soda's Dennis, a lot more than 30 cents a liter.
You know, Dennis, mostly like you, just likes plain seltzer.
Right.
So plain seltzer here is about 99 cents. So he's making it for about 30 to 35 cents. If you add the flavoring, it adds about 10 cents a bottle. But you're still making soda for 45 to 50 cents a liter. Where here in Manhattan, it's $1.29.
And if Mayor Bloomberg had his way, you wouldn't even have been able to buy it.
Yeah,
so.
They would. If he had his way, they would be making little 8-ounce bottles that you could fit. even though the machine is $100, you can make it up pretty easily. But the neat thing, Leo, is not having to.
Well,
store
you make it up. Let me figure this out for you. So
okay,
if it's 30 cents a bottle, and it costs $1 a bottle. In the
You're
stores,
saving 70 cents a bottle.
70 cents a bottle, and so that means it'll take about 150 bottles before you break even, and then after that, you're saving.
You're saving.
Yeah.
You're saving.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like $100 seems expensive for what you get, but I guess I mean it is a long term saving. By the way, the other point is that you can make more healthful soda, right?
You can. Yes,
because they don't use high fructose corn syrup in their flavorings, things like that.
Well, you know, Dennis uses his own flavorings. He loves apple juice.
Oh, you can
so
make your
he
own.
Makes salsa
there you go.
And just puts in ¼ cup of apple juice
Got
and
it.
He makes his own apple cider.
Plus, it's ecologically better because you don't have soda bottles. You're reusing the bottle. You have to use their bottle, right?
You have to use their bottle and their...
That doesn't wear out, though.
No, the bottle, you know, it is dated. I think they're supposed to be replaced after 4 years.
Oh,
I'm not
right.
quite
okay.
sure why, but
it's
anyway.
BPA-free, reusable, and it has, ladies and gentlemen, a fizz-preserving cap.
Yeah. Yeah, and the new one, the Source, has LEDs to show you how much carbonation you're putting in.
Ooh.
So that'll...
you know, we have one here because... For some reason, video editors drink a lot of soda pop, and it was starting to be expensive. So we have a little soda stream here, but they still drink the canned soda. They like the cans. They're attached to the cans. They like their Mountain Dew.
I don't think they make a Mountain Dew. Actually,
that's a good question. Can you get brand names? Can you get Coca-Cola?
No, you cannot.
Oh.
But you can get their... taste-alike. They call that taste-alike. Like they have a taste-alike Diet Coke. I'm not crazy about it. Their new pink lemonade, their new grapefruit drink is really good.
Yeah, so they do have Crystal Light and Kool-Aid. Those are brand names. Yes, make sparkling tea, like Diet Green Tea, Pomegranate Peach.
And you can buy Country Time flavors, too. Okay. So they have a deal with Country Time.
So
you
have some brand names, but they don't have the big soda pop names.
The big
soda,
yeah.
So you get Cherry Cola, Cranberry Energy Drink. Their Dr. Pepper is called Dr. Pete. that was his brother.
distant cousin.
By the way, their Dr. Pete is $2 less than their other sodas, so there must be. they do have a Mountain Dew. It's called Fountain Mist. They ginger ale. I love cream soda. They do have cream soda. Have you tried their cream soda?
Honest stuff. I have not. I didn't even realize they had it.
And then I see they have an energy drink, a Red Bull flavored.
Oh, what do they call theirs?
Energy drink.
Okay.
Clever name, eh?
Yeah.
Orange, lime, pineapple, grapefruit. So you like like the grapefruit, right?
I like the grapefruit. It's really good. And the Country Time lemonade's good.
Here's something that could save me is they have tonic water, too.
That's the other thing Dennis buys a lot of.
Because I like my G&Ts.
Well, so does he.
Yes.
And so he makes his own tonic, which also saves
interesting.
Him.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And will that help you with the malaria, too? Does it have quinine in it?
No, I'm not sure. I'm not a doctor, but I'll make any claim you like.
You know, you're slowly working on me. I have to say, even if people just did this instead of buying bottles, the savings in plastic bottles, which are just loading up in the landfill, would be huge.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, when we talk $99, it's a kit. So you get the soda making machine. You get one carbonating bottle.
Okay.
And you get a package of six different trial flavors.
All right.
So you can see which ones you like.
You get quite a bit. So the new one's just better made, so it won't explode
in your
face.
It's better made. There's more metal. that never happened to me.
It makes me nervous, but there's pressure. It feels like there's pressure going in there.
Yeah, you know what? I'm looking at the way the bottles are designed, and there's a little channel there that I feel it must be there to let excess
pressure release
out in case you go beyond the.
Do they have a Three Stooges nozzle so I can put it down Moe's pants?
No, but if you just put the cap back on right after you make it, shake it up and let her rip.
You're winning me over. I gotta confess. Dick DiBartolo, Mad's maddest writer. He is available at his website. In fact, all the details about the SodaStream source are there, gizwiz.biz. That's also where you'll go to play the What the Heck Is That contest.
Yeah.
Chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine from Mad's Maddest Writer. I have mine, and it is truly a cherished memento because I grew up reading Mad Magazine and loving all of you guys.
I see the cover. Is that your trash bin?
Well, that's... No, just near there. Thank you. Thank you, Dickie D. That does it for me, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks to Heather Hammond, to Nathan Straighten. Thanks to you for joining us. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad and iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.